Hello and welcome to the Dan Assor Show, inspiring and insightful conversations with event professionals. The Dan Assor Show is supported by headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology, an award-winning event registration supplier for organisers of trade shows, exhibitions and conferences. The show's official venue sponsor is conference and exhibition venue Business Design Centre, which has just become B Corp certified, showing its high standards of social and environmental impact. The show is also supported by TF Connect, Tarsus Group, Terrapin and 19 Group. Heather, you are the CEO and founder of H2K Labs, and today we're going to be speaking a bit about strategies for event and media organisers to boost revenue growth with a specific focus on data. Before we sort of get into the topics that we're going to talk about, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and what H2K Labs does and who it does it for?
So please. My background is B2B media and events. As I say, I grew up with a B2B media logo on my diapers. My great-grandfather on my grandmother's side of my father's mother was the founder of Thomas Publishing Company, which recently got acquired by Xometry in December 2021. So I grew up working there and ran a small part of the company for a while called Manufacturing Executive, which was an integrated media portfolio of digital advertising, lead generation, newsletters, webinars. We had actually started doing podcasts in the format that they were at that time. We had a hosted buyer event, and we did a lot. It was a really very innovative small little brand, which ended up getting acquired by Frost & Sullivan, which then ended up selling it to National Association of Manufacturers. So I know media and events inside and out. And, you know, fast forward to today, my company helps media, digital information, event businesses, marketing services, any business that has a complex data infrastructure, two-sided business model, the content component, and helps with data-fueled revenue growth. And we focus on three areas. One is the actual data strategy. Two is how that data strategy is fueling the revenue growth. And three, how that revenue growth impacts product innovation. And we do that through a combination of services. And we also are basically a value-added reseller for two purpose-built platforms that I reviewed and think really meet the needs of our customers. One is called Insightify, which we've actually white-labeled and are adding capabilities to meet the needs of CFOs, CROs, CEOs, and their teams in terms of, you know, creating a single source of truth and being able to, through that, have real-time insights and predictive forecasting, you know, across not just revenue, but the financial side, so EBITDA. And then a second platform called Channel Metrics, which is really focused on the customer delivery side. A huge pain point for any marketing service company is the reporting and delivery of digital ROI and lead generation. So we sell those too.
Can you explain what's meant by a data first approach? Because we hear about it a lot. We hear, you know, event organizers, B2B organizers specifically, I have a lot of them on the program talking about data, how important it is. We're here in an era of private equity investment, lots of M&A going on at the moment, and people talking about their businesses being data first businesses rather than event or media businesses. So talk to me about what you mean by a data first approach.
So there's three ways to skin this. I won't say cat, I'll say orange, whatever, peel the orange. And then the first is data is literally the billion-dollar asset that these companies are sitting on and always has been. And it's always really struck me as odd that it's just become the hot topic. But the data is very rich in that, one, the data can help with what I call the internal monetization, right? How are you using data to improve what you're doing internally to either save cost or create more value without really adding any investment, right? So it's improving what you do through data. And that has a very significant impact on your bottom line, your P&L. And investors are very interested in that, by the way. It's doing more with less, yeah, right? Then there's the second part is, which is your actual, how are you commercializing it externally, right? How are you taking your data and making a product that people will pay for? That data monetization has two formats. One is called a wrap. So how am I using data to wrap it around my existing products so that they are more appealing to customers, gives me a better competitive edge, makes them more sticky, can allow me to upsell and gives me pricing power. That's the second layer of data. And then the third layer is the what I call direct commercialization or selling it. Like you actually have a brand new business line, business model where your data can be, you become a SaaS business in a way where you're selling data in different formats or insights as a subscription model and your market opens up to, you know, way more than you have on the advertiser side or the sponsor side. But underlying all of that, that explanation is something that I call like you're either data aware, which I think most people are, or you're actually data driven, right? Everyone talks about data. Okay. I talk to so many people who think they know they need to do something with data, but they don't know where to start. And they don't look at it as from an enterprise approach. They look at it from a functional approach, right? Which is the wrong way to do it. Right? Data is an enterprise game. Data is everybody's business. And data has to become part of the daily flow of work for every single employee so that you're making data-driven decisions to improve your business outcomes. And that part of the employee side, the data democratization, you will never, ever be able to acquire the data skills you need to be successful. You have to build them internally. And the only way to do that is to democratize data throughout the organization and make it part of how your business makes decisions. That's truly data driven. It's a company who is innovating using data. Every employee is using data. You're monetizing the data. You're creating value for stakeholders with data. It's not just one part like I see, which is the audience side on media and events.
Sure. Thank you. And we're going to come on and talk about how you sort of implement that into people and culture. When you're speaking to businesses and you're speaking about utilizing data in their, let's say, event strategies, what are the first steps that you'd recommend? So if I came to talk to you and I said, oh, I don't know, I've got all these sets of data, we really want to do better with it, we're doing some things, but we should be doing more. How do you sort of work with them?
So that's a great question, because that goes to where do I start? And a lot of companies I speak with in events, it's like revenue got left behind. Like, I don't know what happened, but like, so you, the first part is, if I asked you right now to tell me across all of the events that you're selling, could you share with me the number of your exhibitors that are either buying both or should be buying both with a push of a button? The answer is 99.9%. No, I cannot do that.
Not on a push your button.
So my first recommendation is you need to create a single source of truth across all of your brands, all of your regions, everywhere. You need to start standardizing what you're selling in some way or another so you can measure performance against and benchmark. And you need to then look and say, like, you know, one thing can be like, there's such an opportunity for cross-sell and upsell across brands. And I would think that a lot of the private equity companies or acquiring companies are buying these brands because they see this opportunity of convergence. But if you don't have that, where's the convergence happening? Which company targets are the best to go after first? You know, who's doing it already and how do we rinse, lather, repeat on that and use that as our test and pilot and skill up our sales team to be able to sell this way and then, you know, scale. So that's big, but that's definitely the way that I would see the first way to go.
Sure. So if you said that to me, I'd say that sounds great. I don't know. And coming back to what you just said before, you know, I don't know if you've got the skill set in house and, you know, you might suggest that, you know, you can't buy it in. So actually then let's talk about that now. So how, you know, whose department would it fall in? Where do we start as individuals? You know, what's the first of all,
data is every functional leader's business and role in terms of creating value. So I say that all the time. It's not sitting in the CDO's office, right? So in this case, I would say that the functional role that would spearhead this as the stakeholder to me would be the person whose butt's on the line if you're not hitting revenue targets. And that's the CRO or the VP of sales, whoever this person is, right? I would say the CFO is absolutely involved in this. CFOs love value creation and they want to be creating more value for their businesses that they're running. So this is huge on their list. So I would say it would be a partnership between the CRO and CFO. And one of the things that I see as a blocker when I talk about this is, well, holy crow, I'm going to have to change all. I want my sales team to keep going. Like, we can't afford to have any change right now. That means I'm going to have to change the CRM. They're using this version of Salesforce. They're using that, you know. You don't have to actually do that.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
You don't. If you use the right platform, you actually have the master data management strategy up at the platform level versus the source level. So your teams keep going the way they are. And you have a dashboard now, though, that can pull that data up. It can be actioned and executed without literally zero disruption to the business. And what that does is it not only allows you to do this in a speedy time to ROI, it also allows you to, if done right, track what's happening across all of these sales teams in real time, where you wouldn't be able to do that. And you could have KPIs, you could create a whole bunch of things to see, to actually measure the investment effort.
Hi, I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Just going to take a brief pause to tell you a little bit about the Dan Assel Show headline sponsor, Jonas Event Technology. Jonas Event Technology, or JET, are an award-winning supplier of event registration, dedicated to providing event organizers with a seamless registration experience and excellent customer service, as proven by their current NPS score of 71. JET provides a full registration solution for trade shows, exhibitions, and conferences, removing the stress of event registration so that event organizers can focus on making their next event the best yet. Visit jonas.events for more information.
Yeah, because it's really important, because again, I've had a lot of CEOs on the show who are doing a buy and build play within the trade show and exhibition space. So they've started with one or two acquisitions and obviously they're buying more. Then I've had, you know, established CEOs. Let's take Lord Carter, who is a group CEO of Informa, you know, and they're buying businesses left, right and center, right? So I guess every time they buy a business, ideally they want to plug it in to this sort of model that you said, and they can get like, you know, a visual of how that's, or maybe there's a cross sell, because again, we talk about serving verticals and communities at the moment, and lots of companies are trying to add on different products and services to the community they serve, and that creates cross sell opportunities for sales teams, right? So I guess what you're talking about and what you're talking to there as well is not for people that are just starting up, but people that are trying to, you know, integrate into businesses that are buying as well. Is that the sort of work that you're seeing?
Yeah, 100%. Well? That's huge. So Informa Markets is a great example. North America, they have, I think, seven different portfolios, seven different instances of Salesforce. I think they're, from what I've learned, creating a, just even with the existing businesses that they've owned for a while, trying to create a roll-up report of forecasting across all of the businesses is time consuming and difficult. So yes, this is absolutely a strategy for any business that is either has acquired and needs to figure out the investment hypothesis of those acquisitions, right? You bought them for a larger purpose. And two, I mean, more on a tactical level, like I want to have immediate visibility into what this new business is doing revenue-wise, how that maps to what the business overall is doing. And I don't want to wait 4 weeks for this information.
Yeah. Let's talk about the sales team. So I used to run a sales team at a trade show organizer. And I was just thinking about, you know, having this conversation where you sort of all the different touch points, right? Where data obviously is incredibly important. I was thinking about areas like the rebook, or actually pre-rebook, if you like, you know, depending on how established the event is. Before you go on site, you want to rebook people into the following year, but also when you're on site as well. Upselling, as you mentioned, new business, key accounts. Can you sort of bring some of that to life, the role of data in modern sales strategies and how, you know, me as an individual, let's say I was a group event director at a big trade show company, what are the sort of things that you're doing maybe compared to what we weren't doing even 5 years ago, never mind sort of 10 or 15 years ago in those areas?
I'll break it down. I'll talk first about the sales team, the what I call activity levels. One of the things when I ran my sales team that used to drive me bananas is the renewal on site. And I would, the reps would just be like, well, no, of course, you know, and I didn't want to bother them. And I'm like, well, I know for a fact that, well, I didn't have this kind of dashboarding then, but I said I knew for a fact, it was more of a hunch, that if I resign, you know, X percent of the companies there, but I had to prepare for some of them because they were larger. So there was a lot of, it wasn't me just showing up, but I knew if I resigned 50% on site, that I was like 90% guaranteed that I was going to hit my target for the next event, because I, you know, and if it was lower, I knew I was had a little bit more of a hill to climb. So the on-site rebook, and then I call the 30-day window around that, is critical timing. Like there's nothing more stressful than sales timing in events, because once the event happens, it's over. So one is looking at their activity levels and being able to see in real time, okay, my A team is getting in touch with their renewals 3 months out. They're sending proposals. They're doing all of this. So I know they're on course. Then I look at my B and C teams that I can, then I can action that and get on top of it. But then the other thing I can do is I can say, look, guys, these guys are hitting quota and you're still off, right? But look what they're doing on renewals that you're not. And here's the data to prove it works. So you now have proof to convince salespeople that if I change my behaviors, I'm going to make more money, right? I've got it right there on paper. The second part is the customer behavior, right? So I've had situations where I've had very large accounts and the person who was the economic buyer suddenly left. And there were signs. That is a massive red flag that needs to be identified as early as possible. There are ways you can pull in data, not just from your own, you know, customer delivery systems. You can, and also like LinkedIn has, you know, signaling, but you also can see changes in customer behavior if you're using the right type of platform, saying it's weird. Like Heather typically answers my emails within 3 days. It's been 5 or 6, or the deal's been sitting there 45 days. And on average, this deal for this customer is a 30-day cycle. So you can actually look at customer behaviors to identify risk as well as opportunity, by the way. And then the third part is program performance. Yep. This is a huge miss. What is the number one reason that people cancel or don't renew or lower their spend with you in the bucket of what I call it's your own damn fault? Program performance. And how many of us have been there where we're like, oh no, we don't have enough leads for, you know, this customer, or it's not, they're complaining about the quality. And so you're running around with your, like a chicken with your head cut off, which, and getting everyone aligned to help that big customer, which takes away from the other customers, which takes away from all of the value creation you should be doing. So you can have your platform not only map what is promised to the customer and how that's trending and what the predicted outcome is so that you can action it early. It can allow you to change levers, like maybe one customer is getting more than the other and you want to balance it out. And it also will show you new trends, like, for example, that you could do in upselling. Like, you know, for example, this customer is getting a ton of leads in this category that they, you know, let me call them and talk to them about this. Is this a market they want to attack? Because we have all these other brands that do that. So that's where the program performance comes in.
You are listening to The Dan Assel Show, inspiring and insightful conversations with event professionals. The Dan Assel Show's official venue sponsor is conference and exhibition venue Business Design Center, which has just become B Corp certified, showing its high standards of social and environmental impact. For more information, visit businessdesigncenter.co.uk.
Be notified first about new episodes by following me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify platforms, and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Search Dan Assel.
You know, I was doing a bit of research. I looked at the likes of RX Global, who I think recently released some sort of exhibitor dashboard. So their exhibitors can have a look at how they're doing. And as you say, you know, sort of track how they're working with their teams. So I guess, you know, if you're sharing the knowledge, you can have a conversation that can then allow you to, as you say, potentially upsell or at least retain that customer or bring out any problems. Because I was going to ask you, coming to sort of exhibitors, how we as event organizers can effectively use data to demonstrate value to potential sponsors and exhibitors. You touched on some of it there. But again, maybe give us a real life example or hypothetical example of how that might work.
And you're talking about like new business. They haven't worked with you before. Yeah.
Yeah, let's start with you.
Really good use case with that. And I'm really glad to hear that. I didn't know about that news with RX Global. That's awesome. I used to call it vision to decision, or start the conversation early and stay there with my large customers. Why? I wanted them to spend money where the buyer was going to find information across multiple channels and really build a program that was mapped to this buying journey. And the buying journey in media is, let me go look at some articles, or if you have a product discovery tool, or you may have webinars or podcasts, you know, you may have a website that's about the event and they're going in, you know, people want to plan their time well, and they're looking at the sponsors, they're saving them. All of this is incredibly awesome data, right? So one is, you could take a lookalike exhibitor group, anonymize it, and say, you know, your company, let's say it's high tech, I'll just use IBM as an example. I'm talking to IBM, and it's a manufacturing show. And I'm going to say, IBM, here are these, you know, I aggregated data from five companies. I can't tell, you know, but it's aggregate. Here are the types of programs they've done. This type works the best in terms of getting you if quantity is your number. This one works great if it's quantity and quality. This one works if it's thought leadership. This one, you know, like I can take data from other programs and mix them together based on company size. And that's real proof. That's real life. It's real proof. So that's one way you could use it. You could make that self-serve on your website, actually. If I'm an exhibitor new and I wanted to say, like, hey, what do exhibitors look like me if I spend $5,000 or $10,000? Or like, so that's a second way on the new business side.
You know, during the pandemic, obviously exhibitors had to press pause on their spend, right? So for the first time, let's take an exhibitor who was always going back to the same trade show because they felt they had to keep going back to competitors were there. Everyone stops. So, you know, people tell me it then meant that they had to almost re-educate that exhibitor again, because that sort of expense had come out of their budget, they put it somewhere else, and they're still sort of doing all right. So this sort of approach allows you to be really empirical, and obviously, as we said, data-driven to provide evidence. Now, it might take a bit more time. You might have a sort of dyed-in-the-wool salesperson who is more about volume and try to convince people. So does that mean that, you know, coming back to people, does that mean you think sales teams and sales reps have to completely change their mindset, you know, if they've been doing it for a while and new people coming in are just completely learning, you know, this is what we now do?
No one likes to change, unfortunately, but unfortunately change is here. I think it was happening before COVID. COVID just, you know, took what was probably going to take another 7 years and, you know, nailed it down into 12 months. That's how long, you know. So a couple things about salespeople. Number one, I do not believe that not hitting quota is always the salesperson's fault. I think there are so many other reasons why, and not having access to data is one of them. But I also know, speaking to clients, that some of them are in a real bind. They've got their old school salespeople who know how to sell square footage, take orders, same thing over and over again, do not know how to really do any new business acquisition, don't understand the difference between I kept the company, I have the logo, but you're like, well, no, you kept it, but it went down $40,000, right? But like, well, no, I saved it. Well, no, that's actually a reduction. And that is a sign of churn, right? Like, you don't have that mindset. So unfortunately, those people either have to get on the train and change and learn new skills, selling solutions, using a data-driven approach, really understanding that leading indicators are the most important driver to quota attainment, or you have to get rid of them if they don't jump on that train. So one is that's where we are as a business. The other part, though, is I don't know if it's fair for me to say it so drastically, because I don't really know how well data has been democratized among those teams, the training that's gone along with it to help them make the journey, you know?
So I was going to ask you, and I know you talk about building an aligned customer-centric team, sort of read that quite a bit within some of your work. What is that sort of some of the thing you're referring to? I know we're talking about skill sets, but also it's a shift in mentality as well, isn't it? It's not just about using the data, it's about putting the customer, this seems obvious when I talk about it, say it now, putting the customer at the center of everything what you do. Sort of bring that to life. What are the benefits of a sort of aligned customer-centric team? And actually explain.
I'm going to throw a question to you to help me answer that. When, in your experience, when you sell a client, how many people on that team, how many people is that client talking to execute an exhibit program?
But yes, it might be sales, might be marketing, might be operations, obviously finance at some point within, but it's at least sort of four or five different touch points. And also on their side, I guess, as well, right? So you've got the sales team, the marketing team, and obviously the delivery team.
And my second question is, how many times when a customer didn't get the outcome that they were promised and paid for, did finger pointing occur? Because it was marketing's fault, or it was the speaker's, people's fault. Like, everyone's fault, you know?
Sales would always say, well, you know, we didn't deliver the right people maybe to the event, or I don't know, like the lead scanner wasn't up to scratch, all sorts. Yeah, I mean, you end up passing the buck.
So the reason why I asked those two questions is because I experienced that too when I was running my team. And I had two experiences with customers that were my clients. One was when I was consulting with Feather as their first VP of sales and helping them learn how to sell into events, which is a very unique sales proposition. And then another client who was going through a big, massive, you know, financial transition. And I was their interim CRO, and they had a place called the Revenue Room. So on the Feather side, I learned everything I possibly could about SaaS and the SaaS organizational construct, metrics, all financial modeling, everything. And on that Revenue Room side, they were doing something, despite the financial stress that they were under, is that they were putting their CSMs, their SDRs, and their sales teams all in the same actual physical room. And they had sales squads that would focus on customer segments. So utilizing this combination of knowledge that I got from both clients, I said, you know, I really could see how a new organizational construct could, utilizing the best of each of these, could really help media and event companies that are so rooted in old school sales principles to really improve customer centricity, customer alignment, great outcomes, and really reduce or eliminate the finger pointing. If everyone knows what is being sold, how to sell it, expectations are being set correctly, marketing is completely aware and aligning their programming to what those customers want well ahead of time, that content is involved in knowing, like, okay, our top 50 clients, here's all of, this is great. This is everything that we know that would appeal to the audiences that they're looking to reach. Let's get this part of the program done. So that when the things like the lead scanner not working happen, it's just the lead scanner. You know, it's, as I always say, you want to anticipate every single problem you possibly can because something else is going to go wrong, but that the team has done everything possible to make customer outcomes work. And so this construct that I developed.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's basically, you know, not seeing company as an exhibitor, you see them as a customer, and you're trying to, as you say, take them through that journey. And everyone knows, because it's I guess sometimes you see them as, you know, one exhibitor out of 300, you know, and another one, then the next one, but actually it's giving them that service that helps them through the journey. Just want to go back to measuring and showcasing ROI for sponsors and exhibitors specifically post event. So how would you use data in that regard to measure showcase ROI afterwards?
So it depends on what the the event has. So anything digital or mobile that would be included. I would, if they did sessions or, you know, or there were sponsored sessions, I would basically give, I would create reports for my sponsors that told them what I call very direct, you know, leads that were generated. And I would include a scoring mechanism based on what they want and what the behaviors were of these customers directly with them, or maybe perhaps indirectly, like they visited five of your competitors or they attended your competitors' sessions. You know, obviously you have to do some in a way that's anonymized, but the point is that you want to give a score that helps them prioritize those leads, right, in the funnel, because it's one of the biggest other things, like none of them converted. Sure. Well, why? Like, so now you have better proof. I'd also say that if they did advertising or any other type of marketing with you around the event, that that is included in this report. And if you have a website that has content, even though they may not have sponsored it, but that they are mentioned in it or highlighted, what is the halo effect? So you're giving them everything your platform is doing. Yeah. It's powerful. And then instead of being afraid of the results, which is bogus, okay? If you are afraid of your results, there's something more wrong with you than data, okay? You should, but not everything works, right? And sometimes it's the creative. Sometimes it's the topic. Sometimes it, you did screw up. If you have data and you can compare, like you're saying, you know, you one, I can benchmark you against other customers and I can say, guess what? I think a lot, you know, you did well actually compared. But if you want to drill down, you say, you know what, these three topics did so well, like for what you were looking to do, these two not. Next time, let's go up on those three, let's add five, and let's not spend money on those. It allows you to be an advisor because they also don't know. They have to test. They're not expecting everything to work.
Before we finish off, I just want to talk to you about forecasting. There's so many topics that you talk about and they're really interesting. You say forecasting is a continuous journey. I read a sort of blog post from you, not a monthly report. What do you mean by that?
So a few things. Number one, in the markets we serve, these and that you're very involved in, they have a very unique asset. Yeah. And that is data is changing 24/7, 365 every minute. Why? Because your business is information and people are constantly looking for information. So you have information about your business that literally changes all the time. Now it may stay the same in certain trends, but you need to have your heartbeat on that. And if that information is impacting customer outcomes, that has a direct impact on pipeline. And I'll just use a really baseline example. We used to sell lead gen programs and we were doing data enhanced lead gen way back when. So to the best of our ability without the technology, buyer intent, it was all manual. But I knew if we sold Cisco a $100,000 program on lead gen, I knew that they, you know, and it was Q1, they needed all those leads by the end of Q1 and they had to fit all of the parameters. So if I was pacing behind, I still had to deliver the leads. It just pushed into Q2. So what did my salesperson change their forecast? No. You need a system that says, okay, you know what? Let's not mess around with the salesperson. Let their pipeline be their pipeline. I need this forecasting data to take that revenue that was in their Q1, closing on March 30th. It's now Q2. And I'm going to take the new predict the forecast of the program performance. And I'm going to say, it's actually going to close in May. And I'm going to reduce the probability because we were late and I'm going to, and blah, blah, blah. It may come in earlier or more great under promise over deliver. That's just one example of the impact of real-time data on your forecast. And then there's other ones that, this is another example. No one really thinks about it, but I sure do. And that is salesperson's risk of flight. So I want to know, if behavior is changing on the part of the salesperson. I want to know if they're making less calls. I want to know if they're not pushing their deals forward quickly enough, or if their rate of proposal generation is slowing down. Why? Because in the world of media and events, I'm going to stick around until I get my commission check, but I'm going to work the least amount possible because I'm not going to get paid that last part because I'll be gone well ahead of time. Yeah. I want to know that ahead of time, because if I have a gap in Q4 where that person left or they weren't pumping it in and I was expecting it, it has a very significant impact on quote attainment.
Final question, Heather, and it's just about the future and sort of how you foresee the evolution of data-driven strategies in the B2B events and media sectors, maybe in the next sort of 5 to 10 years. Where do you think we're headed?
So the way I think, one, it's going to be a journey, because I believe that they're behind on the revenue side. Two, I think though, once it's picked up and the understanding that revenue data actually has a direct correlation to what's happening on your audience side and vice versa, you're going to actually see new solutions being generated that not only produce better value for customers, for which they will pay a much higher premium, because you're going to have such a tighter impact on pipeline generation and revenue for them, but you also can prove it. This has been one of the biggest problems with media and events, is the proof of the ROI. We're relying on what someone else tells us. Right? And if that person leaves, then we're relying on someone even caring about telling us that the leads that were delivered. So I think data monetization has just been touched. I think it goes well beyond the purchase intent behavior. I think that it provides media and events a whole new way to create value that is unique. And it goes well beyond selling real estate on, in a show hall.
Thank you. That was a great summary. I really enjoyed it. We could have gone on for longer and longer. You make some fantastic points. If people want to, and I'm sure they will, contact you, what's the best way?
Easy. Heather at h2klabs.com. I have to remember it has an M at the end.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. The Dan Assel Show is grateful for the support of headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology, venue sponsor Business Design Center, and event industry supporters TF Connect, Tarsus Group, Terrapin, and 19 Group. Be notified first about new episodes by following me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify platforms, and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Search Dan Assel.